Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Welcome to the program. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, and our goal each day is to find ways that we can connect faith to life. We can look at biblical principles, apply them to daily life situations. Today's program will be a good opportunity as we focus in on health and health care, and we get a great faith perspective today. I want to just mention a couple things. If you've not gone to our website recently, you'll see right in the front page at myfaithradio.com the My Prayer for 2014. And it's just an opportunity for you to share some information on what you would like us to pray with you for. It's something that we're committed to doing. And so you can just check that out, myfaithradio.com. Also get some information about the community baby shower that's going on several of our markets, Sioux Falls and Waterloo, Sioux Falls and Fargo. It's a big event every year. And Ryan, of course, years ago, you were a part of the Sioux Falls team. And, you know, that's that is a big deal.
It makes a huge difference to young families. Yeah, and it's a affirmative step to make a difference. Really cool.
And we're plugged in Minneapolis, St. Paul area as well. So some details online there about the community baby shower. So check that out, myfaithradio.com. Talking about, New Year's babies. I'm looking at you, Ryan, thinking actually, but so. No, you're looking great today. Ryan's at the controls. Our guest today is Dr. David Stevens, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. It's the nation's largest faith-based organization with over 16,500 doctor members. And prior to his service with CMA, Dr. Stevens served as medical director of Samaritan's Purse, serving in key areas such as Somalia and the Sudan, leading medical teams in the midst of war and epidemics. Really, Dr. Stevens has quite a track record. In fact, we were just talking before the program. He was part of a team that was doing some relief in the Philippines this past past months. And, of course, they had that devastating typhoon. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. One of the things that Christian Medical and Dental Association does is provide medical teams each year to do missions. These doctors are committed. And so we're excited to have Dr. Stevens back with us on. He speaks regularly at seminars and medical schools and conferences and churches. Talk about stem cell research or cloning or genetics or faith and health and all those things. He's author of Jesus MD and co-author of Leadership Proverbs. And it's great to have Dr. David Stevens back with us. Good afternoon, David.
Hey, Neil. So good to be with you.
Let's jump in right at the beginning here. We're just kind of, you know, a few days past the new year. So if you were America's doctor and we were in for our annual checkup, what would be your diagnosis about the our state of health as a nation?
I think confusion might be the proper word. A lot of people are confused. I think some are apprehensive about what's ahead. The unknown does that. And many people are wondering what's the full impact of the Affordable Care Act going to be on them and their family. We've heard a lot about the website and registration not meeting expectations and all that type of thing. But really, there's, you know, 2,800 pages of regulations, and much of that is going to affect individuals. Some things people are going to like, and some things they're not going to like very much at all as this continues to roll out. Now, the things that have been promoted that all of us have heard about is the fact that your children can be on your insurance policy to age 26, people like that. The fact that there's no lifetime maximum on cost, you can't be excluded because of a pre-existing condition. These are things that really needed to be addressed in large part. Unfortunately, all of them cost more and increase the cost of our health care. But then there's going to be a lot of other effects as well on the availability of physicians and what's going to be paid for and lots of other issues. Neil, because what's the biggest issue in medicine? The biggest issue in medicine is it costs too much and it's increasing in cost, and we've got to deal with that.
You know, David, you mentioned that the cost, and we'll talk more about the ACA as we go along and some of the other concerns about that. But I'm wondering, is there a correlation between dollars spent and a healthy life? Because if you look at at the American lifestyles. We seem to spend a lot, but you know, there's a lot of things like obesity and addictions and those kinds of things.
What makes us healthy is not the fact that we have a CT scanner in our community or a top-notch level 3 trauma center or whatever. Because what makes us healthy is preventative things, and you've hit the button on the head. When I was a missionary in Africa for 11 years, you know, I was in charge of a mission hospital, 250 beds, and we had plenty to do. But it became very clear after I first arrived that we were chasing our tail, because we had kids with measles, we had kids with tetanus, we had kids with whooping cough, we had the biggest killer in Africa, which is dehydration from vomiting and diarrhea and drinking unclean water. And you get people better and send them out the door, and they came back and they had the same disease again. Well, we don't have those problems here. We've got great immunization, we've got sanitation, but we have behavior related diseases. In other words, we eat too much, our blood pressure is too high, we have heart attacks, we don't exercise enough, and that is the root of much of the disease that we have in this country. And those all have to do with behavior, and that's where we've got to, that's where we become more healthy, not in the fact that we've got the latest gizmo down at the hospital that can do some new procedure. And that's where effort needs to be put. Now, the Affordable Care Act is putting money into preventative screening. In other words, if you need your cholesterol screened or a physical or whatever, your insurance company is now required to give that to you without any deductible. But the problem is having screening methods available does not change behavior. What changes behavior is being motivated to change behavior. And that's an area that, unfortunately, we have not addressed as well individually or as a culture.
You know, is that, I mean, I would think as a doctor, a physician, that you can, you know, see your patients every year with the annual physical and say, you know, you need to lose some pounds, you need to eat better, you know, stop these habits. I mean, that's probably not enough to really bring about change, is it? I mean,
no, knowledge doesn't change behavior, unfortunately. In fact, I did a lot of research on this when we were in Africa. I mean, we had 300,000 people in our catchment area, a lot of cultural beliefs that we had to deal with. And so how do you motivate people to change their behavior? And we did that with what we call non-financial incentives. Money doesn't change our behavior. And it was things like recognition, non-threatening comparison, creating a sense of family, competition, communication. And we did lots of things to make that happen. Let me give you an example. It just happened this Christmas. For the holidays, my son gave my wife and I a watch. It looks like a watch that actually counts the number of steps, the number of stairs we go up every day. And then he challenged us with his girlfriend to see who was going to do best and get 10,000 steps a day. You know what? I've been exercising regularly, but I'm even exercising more now because my son's not going to beat me. Having that accountability and that competition, and every day I get my, you know, I reach my wrist and how many steps have I gotten so far and what do I need to do? And I'm going to take the dogs for another walk. I'm going to go down and get on the treadmill. You know, those type of things motivate us. And so finding an accountability partner, where you can compare yourselves. When we were doing our community health work, we were trying to motivate volunteers to do all this teaching and training. And every month we printed a newspaper, and in it we listed everybody's work output, how many homes they had visited, how many new latrines they had helped dig, how many clean water supplies they had helped develop. We didn't hit people over the head with it, but everybody knew what everybody else was doing, and it motivated them to work. Now, those principles can be applied to our lives, to your life, to my life. Who can we have as accountability agent in our spiritual walk and in our health walk can make a huge difference. So there's ways that you can motivate people and get them excited and enthused about doing this. And this has been shown in programs for diabetics and others that this type of approach really makes a difference. I'm with a group that has the same idea that I have of something needs to be done, and I can compare myself with them, and we can compete in fun, and we've got good communication, and people recognize me for my achievements. Those things are what motivate people to change, and we need to be more in that direction personally and in our society.
Does suggest that maybe at the new year we kind of evaluate our friends and who we're hanging with. And are they, you know, I mean, not to, but maybe there's some people that aren't really helping us, right? And that's those that I think have been in addictions. No, they can't go back to their same friends. Right?
Absolutely. And this is the exact way that, AA works. And, you know, those weekly, two times a week, three time a week meetings and accountability and education and communication, and it changes behavior. And it's based on Christian principles. I mean, the Bible teaches us about accountability and the importance of it in our lives and in building our own integrity. And that goes right on over to health. And unfortunately, often we hang around and or with people that make us comfortable, not with people that are going to challenge us or help us to improve our lives.
Dr. David Stevens is our guest today. He's Chief Executive Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. They're the nation's largest faith-based organization, over 16,500 doctor members. And Dr. Stevens served with Samaritan's Purse prior to coming here in areas of war and epidemics like Somalia and Sudan. He's had some great impact on parts of the world that really need important health. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some of the issues facing our health system in our nation, the Affordable Care Act. We'll get more into that. Talk a bit about the courts weighing in on the contraceptive mandate. Talk about supply and demand for doctors and healthcare professionals as things change in our country. We welcome your calls, too. You have a health-related question, or maybe just a kind of a policy question, welcome you to join the conversation. 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH, or you can drop us a note online at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. More with Dr. David Stevens in a moment. Your support of Faith Radio makes a difference every day of the year, and we're thankful. When you make an ongoing gift of $15 a month or more, we'll send you our exclusive 2014 Faith Radio calendar as a way to say thanks in a very special, tangible way. This full-color 12-month calendar contains stunning images from around the Upper Midwest. So visit myfaithradio.com/support to give your gift today. Your gift helps change lives all across the Midwest. Thanks.
This season, a chance to reach out and bless new moms and dads who've made the choice for the life of their baby.
Faith Radio and New Life Family Services invite you to be part of the Community Baby Shower.
Be a profound blessing with a simple donation of new baby items.
Items will be distributed through New Life Family Services' Parenting Plus program, teaching family and parenting skills to new parents.
For a full list of items and drop-off locations in your area, visit myfaithradio.com.
Help bless a new family this season with the Community Baby Shower from Faith Radio.
Past the hour, 877-933-2484 is the phone number, 877-93-FAITH. If you'd like to join our conversation today, as we're talking health care and health policy with Dr. David Stevens, who's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and he has he's board certified in family practice, has a master's degree in bioethics from Trinity International University, and serves as a fellow of the Biotechnology Policy Council, the Wilberforce Forum, and does a great deal of speaking and writing and leads this organization with some 16,500 doctor members. And Dr. Stevens, want to talk a little bit about, I guess, that some changes in the way that we think about healthcare in our country, because we're certainly in the middle of some changes there. But I'm interested to know maybe the attitude and the outlook of your member doctors regarding their profession. Are they still enthused about it? Are they? You said that maybe the state of health in America is confusion. But how about the doctors? What would you say is their feeling today?
There's a lot of uncertainty about what this is going to mean for them and their practices, and we're seeing a lot of trends. One is the making it very difficult for private or even small group practices to survive because of increasing regulation, increasing bureaucracy. More and more hospitals are buying practices. We kind of went through this in the 90s, and then they sold them off, and now they're buying them back again, essentially to funnel these practices' patients into their hospital system. So more and more, especially younger doctors, are employees. About 50% of those graduating from medical school are still employees now. And so that brings a whole lot of things. You know, you've already mentioned already, what about my right of conscience? What about Hippocratic medicine if my employer, you know, is trying to push me to do this, that, or the other? So that's a big change. We actually survey our members every 5 years. We just finished another survey, and we saw a drop between about 2004 to 2009, from about 85% of our members were happy with and satisfied with their practices and health care, down to about 75%. This year, it looks like it's gone and bounced up a little bit, back up to about 80%. The other side of the coin is surveys at the national level show that 80% of doctors said if they had enough money to retire, they would do so right away. Mm-hmm. That is of great concern because you want people practicing medicine because they love it and they want to serve people, not because they don't have enough money to retire and are trying to get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, speaking of sort of that interest in retirement, I mean, it does seem like this kind of a simple supply and demand analysis that would suggest that, you know, service isn't going to be what it once was. I mean, considering the new expectations for those that need to be served, or I guess, you know, where people, you know, had the availability of medical care, but it's going to change now. So talk a little bit about your predictions. I mean, is there going to be a supply issue here?
We're going to see people with fewer qualifications taking care of patients, what are often referred to as physician extenders. We're already seeing that trend. I think it's going to accelerate, where you will come to a practice and you'll see a physician assistant or nurse practitioner. I think that's going to escalate because what's inside the Affordable Care Act is some real curbs in cost. And I read a long article using the Cleveland Clinic, one of the premier institutions in our country. And there, you know, they bill about $16 billion a year. They collect about $5.5 billion, so just a little over, about 30% of that. And I save $6 billion, and their actual costs are $5.5 billion. They are predicting in the next 4 years their income is going to drop to $4.5 billion, so almost a 25% decrease. They're already laying off healthcare professionals, saying that, you know, if you come in with back pain, you're going to see a physical therapist first and maybe get an app for your iPhone, and then you may come back, and if you're still not better, you may see a PA. And if you want to see an orthopedist, it may be 3 or 4 weeks. So we're going to be, or longer, it's going to be very much like the situation now in Canada. I just read an article today, and the average wait for an elective procedure in Canada is now 18 and a half weeks, 4.5 months. If it's an orthopedic procedure, it's 40 weeks. So you're essentially talking 9 to 10 months to get something elective. And I think we're going to begin to see some of that in the U.S. just because of the supply and demand problem you're talking about.
That's going to create, I would say, a fair amount of tension, isn't it, where we've come to expect having, whatever we want when we want it.
Absolutely. And this, I think emergency care is still going to be prompt, but if you need a hip replaced or this type of thing, you're often, I think, in the future going to be placed on a waiting list. There's a real need for more primary care doctors. Unfortunately, the vast majority of medical school graduates are not going into primary care, pediatrics, internal medicine, family practice, OBGYN, especially family practice and pediatrics. They're coming out with huge debts. The average debt for a medical student now is approaching $200,000. And so they're wanting to go into more lucrative specialties. And secondly, they want a lifestyle, not of sacrifice, but of balance. And I think there's some wisdom in that on one side, but the other side of it is The medical profession is one that has always been marked by service and sacrifice, and it's not just another job. It's not just regular hours. You go into it because you care for people and want to help them. So there's a lot of problems coming down the line. Now, some good news is, Neil, we've got a couple Christian medical schools that have started, one in North Carolina and one in Mississippi. There's Liberty University is getting ready to start one. School of the Midwest is working on starting one in 2016. I think, as you know, we get in some of the ethical issues and stuff later, I think there's going to be more options for Christian doctors to get a pro-life, service-oriented education. And we may be seeing an increasing split in healthcare between what we call Hippocratic doctors who come into this because of a covenant desire before God to serve people the best they can, and those who go into it for the wrong reasons and perhaps don't treat patients the same.
I guess even if you come from a faith-based perspective, you know, you're still maybe stuck in a system. If you mentioned, you know, 50% are employees now, I mean, you're subject to the principals or the policies or the accountant, perhaps.
Yeah, we're seeing this, and that's where conscientious physicians are having more and more problems in the marketplace, because even though there's some protections in place at the federal level, there's no consequences for not following those, those rules and regulations on right of conscience, and doctors and other healthcare professionals are getting pressured more and more to compromise their deeply held belief system. So this is going to continue to be a battleground. Unfortunately, our freedom of religion is becoming just a freedom of worship, and you'll hear that wording if you listen to it as government officials speak out. Oh, yes, we believe in freedom of worship, which means you can do anything you want in your synagogue or your church or your mosque. But once you walk out, you have to do everything everybody else does, and that cannot affect your behavior. This is one of the great battles we're already in, and I think it's going to intensify in this country. Are we going to lose one of our most precious freedoms, the one that, was at the head of our Bill of Rights by our founding fathers because it was the most important to them.
I was thinking, as your years in missions, you probably that wasn't really an issue, was it? I mean, in terms of you were just what you needed there was probably supplies, right?
Yeah, supplies and more staff and lots of patients. In fact, I wrote, you know, we have about 800 members that are career missionaries like I was overseas. We do a lot of things to support them. And one of the things is we have a monthly newsletter talking about resources and supplies and, you know, training and advice and all sorts of things we do for them. And I write a column in that. And last year I was writing about the Affordable Care Act. I said, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is you may soon have a lot of help. And I got a number of emails back because, unfortunately, some physicians, especially that are financially able, are, you know, looking at retiring early and going overseas in a kind of a second career, because it's not so much the bureaucracy, I think, for Christian doctors. It's increasingly the lack of real patient interaction, almost, you know, the assembly line approach to taking care of patients. And Christian doctors, where the real satisfaction in medicine is with the relationships with patients. And as you get less and less time to have those and more bureaucracy to deal with, you become more dissatisfied in medicine because you're not really having the opportunities to minister and touch lives. You're just a technician. And I think that's when the opportunity to perhaps, if God is nudging them, to go overseas where you have those and where you can pray with patients and you can touch their lives and minister to them emotionally and spiritually as well as physically, that becomes very attractive for those who went into medicine for the right direction. At the same time, we say to our members, yes, God hasn't promised it's going to be easy, and your mission field is as much here as it is overseas, and you shouldn't run away from something. You should be running to what God wants you to do.
Talking a little bit about healthcare today, and I'd love to have you join the conversation. If you have a question or a comment, you can connect with us at 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH, or if it's more convenient online, it's myfaithradio.com. And then just click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's a link right there at myfaithradio.com. Dr. David Stevens is CEO of Christian Medical and Dental Association. They have some 16,500 doctor members. And Dr. Stevens speaks regularly at conferences and medical schools and churches. And he's joining us today as we talk a little bit about some of the implications of changing healthcare in our country. We're going to get into some court decisions and a little bit about life issues as well. End-of-life issues, one of those stories in the news as well. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. 877-93-FAITH. Talking healthcare and health policy today with Dr. David Stevens, CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. They're the nation's largest faith-based organization, some 16,500 doctor members. And Dr. Stevens served prior to CMA, he was medical director of Samaritan's Purse and served in key areas such as Somalia and Sudan, did some amazing work in Africa. Things like development plans and hydroelectric plants and nursing schools and community health development, some amazing things. He has a degree from Asbury and University of Louisville School of Medicine and board certified in family practice, and has a master's degree in bioethics from Trinity International University. And our guest today as we talk healthcare. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. I've been talking a little bit about the Affordable Care Act. And, of course, it's the faith-based groups have been concerned about some of the mandates. And the courts recently started looking a little more closely at the contraceptive mandate. At least one Catholic group has been exempted. So maybe talk a little bit about the fight there and maybe what your members are saying on this area.
Well, it's of great concern, because if we have government can cause people to violate their deeply held religious beliefs, we've got great concern. That's not a democracy. That is not, we have a Bill of Rights that provides protection in this area. But essentially, totalitarian type of approach, you'll do it or else. And, you know, the reason they say we need to do this is that there's this great need, and every health insurance program in the country needs to provide contraceptives for women free of charge. That's kind of ludicrous, because the president himself said 98% of women in the United States have used contraceptives. Well, if there's such a, if 98% have used them, what's the big need that causes us to want to violate the conscience of all these groups? And both religious and secular organizations that have Christian owners, everything from Hobby Lobby to the Sisters of Mercy out in Colorado, who just got a stay from the Supreme Court, an injunction this week saying that they could not enforce this. Secondly, why are they making this the worst punishment you can imagine? It's $100 per day per employee if you don't provide contraceptives in your health care plan. And as we know, people have varying views on contraceptives, Catholics and Protestants. Some Protestants have very similar to Catholic views on them, versus where my position would be on some contraceptives we know interrupt the developing human embryo, and we should not be using those or paying for them. So this is a big issue. There's over, I think it's 70 or 80 now, suits. They're winding up through the courts. It's going to end up in the Supreme Court. But this is an enormous issue, because if we lose this battle, it's going to boil over into every area of life. The big issue is not contraceptives. The big issue is, can we force people to violate their deeply held religious beliefs? And if they can do it in this area, they'll be able to do it in any area.
And I know we've talked in the past that, I mean, the essential ingredient of a doctor-patient relationship is trust, right? And so that there's, beliefs are pretty important in that.
Well, do you want a doctor of conscience, or do you want one of conscience? I mean, all of us want a doctor of conscience that will stand up to an insurance company, the government, or anybody else in our behalf. And so we don't want to ethically neuter our healthcare profession, and especially our Christian doctors or people of conscience. And, or what's going to happen when, it's the cheapest thing at the end of life is a handful of lethal pills, and that's now a national policy. And we get into some of the things that they're already facing in Europe, where they're doing bed clearing in nursing homes and and critical care units based on the fact, well, we don't think you have a life worthy to be lived and there's not much salvageable here, so we'll starve you to death or we'll give you a handful of lethal pills. So these type of things, you know, you say, well, what's the big deal with contraceptions? It's the reprincible that's the thing. And once you say you can violate people's religious beliefs just based on the fact that the government thinks that's best for society, then we've got deep, deep problems.
You know, speaking of end-of-life issues, there's those are cropping up in the news. This 13-year-old girl in California on life support. Give us a little perspective maybe on how you're looking at that.
Yeah, and I think it's an important topic because people, you know, remember Terry Schiavo and what we went through with that situation and all the discussions. This one is profoundly different. This is not about someone who is brain damaged, as Terry Schiavo was in persistent vegetative state. But this is about someone who has been determined to be brain dead. And what do I mean by that? Brain dead means that there's irreversible cessation of all functioning of the brain, including the brain stem. The brain stem is the base of the brain, and that's what controls your respiration and all the automatic things that happen that we don't even think about. That our body does. And they've had six neurologists examine her, including one appointed by the court, independent ones that were not on the hospital staff. But sadly and unfortunately, I mean, this is just a terrible case of a girl that was severely brain damaged and then brain dead from, you know, a routine tonsillectomy. And a lot of anger on the family side and distrust of that hospital, which boiled over into this battle, which has been into the media, that, you know, they refused to have her respirator stopped even though she is legally dead. I mean, her death certificate has already been issued. And in fact, when she was transferred this week, Neil, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, they discharged her to the morgue. And then her parents arranged an ambulance to pick the body up there and transport it. So why am I concerned about this? I mean, first of all, this has been handled poorly with the family. And the first step of the grieving process is denial. And they are lodged there and not moving from it. This has not really happened. She's not really dead. And I think there's pretty good evidence, the best of my knowledge, that that's the case. She is legally dead and there is no chance for recovery. Secondly, it gets confusing for us in the pro-life movement because as people speak out and fight for this, the science is so clear-cut and it's so easy to determine brain death with the test we have now and the physical exams we do that it's going to cloud the issue perhaps as we deal with the things like persistent vegetative state and when people are not brain dead but people want to make them dead. And that's my great concern that we, you know, some people may be picking the wrong battle, which is ultimately going to cause harm to the longer term process of protecting life.
You've written and talked much about sort of bioethics, and in fact, I have a degree in that. I'm interested in, as you talk about pro-life issues, are we, you know, we're seeing amazing advances in technology, but that also, you know, there's not always a lot of guardrails in some of those choices too.
Our ability in technology far exceeds our societal ability to decide what we're going to do with that technology. You may have seen the new, I haven't, but heard about it, the new television series that's coming on, I think it's called Intelligence or Intelligent or something like that, about nanotechnology and essentially a person that has a supercomputer implanted in their brain and are on the internet directly through the internet in their brain to this computer. The issues we're going to face in the future having to do with enhancement, making us more than human, that are going to come out of some of the good things that's going to happen with stem cell therapy, you know, non-embryonic stem cell therapy, through nanotechnology, through computerization, cyborg abilities. I mean, it's wonderful if we can create an artificial arm for an amputee that lost, you know, their arm in the Iraq War that they can actually control with their brain. That would be wonderful. But that same technology then can be used to do things that may not be so wonderful and to make people more than human. And we create two forms of the human race, the enhanced and the unenhanced. And what's that have to do with justice and, you know, all the other issues that we're concerned about and what happens when it goes wrong? So there's, you know, the issues we're dealing with now when you talk about physician-assisted suicide, abortion, and some of those things, they're very clear-cut in the sense that they're life and death issues, and it's pretty clear to us this is right and this is wrong. But where do you draw the line? What about when we can give medicines that 'll improve your memory two or three times? That might be great for someone with Alzheimer's, but what about a college student taking it? That's already happening. So I can do better on exam and outscore you, and so you're at a disadvantage because you're not taking that pill. There's a lot of issues ahead that are not so black and white, but are going to be gray and going to be very difficult to work through.
I don't know if it's a gray area, but a green area, I guess, one getting a lot of attention, medical marijuana. I mean, Colorado kind of leading the way there. I'm pretty sure I can guess what your position is there.
But. Well, there's medical marijuana, which has been the stepstone to recreational marijuana, and it's been amazing to me how fast we've shot through the medical arguments now to recreational marijuana in both Oregon and Colorado. And, the bottom line is, just speaking of it in the medical context, there is some evidence that medical marijuana has some effect on glaucoma and it helps with appetite and cancer patients and everything. But in each one of those incidences, there are drugs that are better at doing it than marijuana. Secondly, if we're going to medicalize marijuana, then we need to really medicalize it. Let me give you an example. Heroin is a drug that people get addicted to and, you know, has a terrible addiction profile. But we medicalized heroin, and we now call it morphine, and we give it to patients that have heart attacks, and we know the dose, we know the quality, we know the side effects, we know the benefits. We know the problems of addiction, and we handle it like that. Unfortunately, what's happened with the medical marijuana debate is just it'd be like saying, let's just let people grow their own heroin and take it as they see fit. We've not treated it like a drug. We're just saying, no, go ahead and inhale it, even though there are over 200 carcinogens in marijuana smoke. Let's just let people dose themselves. We don't know what the quality of that marijuana is, what the potency is, what the safety is, whether you're even getting something that has the potency that someone might need for the effect that they may desire. So this is not the way we approach medically a benefit from a substance, a natural occurring substance, except in medical marijuana. And the reason we've gone this direction is because the advocates see once we accept it medically, then we can have it accepted for anything. And that's exactly what's happened in Oregon and Washington. And we're going to reap the effects of that.
We're going to talk more with Dr. David Stevens in just a moment. Got a couple of questions to get to, and we'd welcome you to join the conversation, 877-933-2484. David Stevens is Chief Executive Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. They have some 16,500 doctor members, and we're talking today about health care, health policy. We'll get to all those questions coming up in just a moment.
On the next Everyday Relationships. Did you see your parents over the holidays? How did it go? We will answer that question a little differently, but we want to help you come to terms with the parents God gave you, no matter what type of relationship you have with them. Dr. Linda Mintel will join us to help you make peace with your parents.
Everyday Relationships. Real life, real talk. Weekdays at 4 on Faith Radio.
It's 15 before the hour, and you're listening to Connecting Faith, talking today with Dr. David Stevens, CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, talking health care. I got a couple of questions to get to. I'll start with the first one. A caller wants to know, since my daughter's had a few health problems and we're interested in seeking counsel from a doctor, how do we go about seeking a Christian doctor? And Maybe, David, just to add to that, what should we expect if we find a Christian doctor?
Well, we have a service available on our website, cmda.org. You can go there, put in your zip code and the type of physician you're looking for. I need an internist, an OBGYN. And it'll give you a number of Christian doctors in your own area that you can seek health care from. I think if you have a Christian physician, what you should be finding is holistic care. You know, unfortunately, our health care has gone to a psychological, physical model. You know, it's either a psychological problem or a physical problem, and they totally ignore the spiritual aspect of that, and that's often the elephant in the room. So you're going to get holistic health care, which, and I hope high-quality health care. It's one of the things we, on the over 247 medical and dental school campuses where we work with students on a weekly basis, one of the key things we point to them is that you need to be excellent at what you do. And that's what honors God and honors your patients. So I would hope you would find a doctor who is highly competent, highly compassionate, and is going to sincerely care for you as a person, not as a disease.
Are there elements of healthcare reform that your organization deems essential?
Well, I think we've got to deal with cost, and it's going to be painful because finding where the benefit burden ratio is right is going to be very difficult. But we're up to almost 19% of the GMP. And it's continuing to increase. And the reason people don't have insurances and the reason we're having healthcare exchanges and increases in Medicaid and whatever is because healthcare costs too much. And we've created enormous cost with technology and increased bureaucracy, which people are estimating maybe as much as 20 to 25% of the cost. Malpractice has increased the cost of healthcare. We've got to deal with these issues and make healthcare affordable, or before long, it's going to be priced out of reach for anybody except the extremely wealthy. I mean, we're hearing stories regularly now in the media of people who go out to get their own policy and find out that they're paying $15,000 to $20,000 a year. Somebody that's making $50,000, $60,000 a year, that's just unsustainable. And so we've got to deal with that issue, or we're going to destroy our healthcare system.
Trying to get through a couple of questions here. Terry wrote in, says, two questions for Dr. Stevens. So one, do you have any idea what the net benefit or harm to life, health, relationships, and productivity may be as a result from the Affordable Care Act? And let me ask you the second one, too. Says, do you have any idea as to how the penalizing of a good conscience be addressed as its ethical consequences?
Well, let me deal with the last one first. And, you know, we've got to stand together. In fact, our organization increasingly is working with other Christian healthcare professional organizations and coming together to network and speak with one voice out on this issue. We need to be at the table. We need to let our concerns be known. We need to educate the public. This is, and in fact, I hardly am moving away from talking about right of conscience and talking about doctors of conscience because the right kind of, you know, is antagonistic where do you want a doctor of conscience, and everyone will almost agree with that. So I think we need to speak out on that. As far as the net effect of the Affordable Care Act, I just think it's too unpredictable. I don't think we're going to end up where we are. I think there's going to be changes demanded by the public and some unforeseen things we're going to see, especially with what's happening now with the exchanges and not enough healthy people signing up. Unfortunately, that may be, or fortunately, depending on your opinion, that may be to increasingly government control to a single payer system, very similar to what Canada and the U.S. has, because I think that's – we know, I don't think, but we know that some of the proponents of this see this as the intermediate step to government control of health care.
There are alternative groups like, MediShare and things. Are you seeing maybe an increase in interest in those?
There is, and it's not, those groups have told us that their enrollment is going up, Samaritan's Ministries, other groups. This is our health care sharing ministries. They are really only for committed Christians. I mean, the qualifications is you have to be a regular church attender, no alcohol use, no smoking, no pregnancy out of wedlock. They do not pay first dollars. It's more focused on major health care costs, not your regular doctor visit or medications that you need. And I think it's something people need to look at and consider. And then they share the cost. You get the opportunity to help someone on a monthly basis through your contribution so that when you have a need, it'll be met as well. So I think it's something very much to look at, and especially for people that do not have health care through their employment, may be a first place to look at.
Amanda called in, had a question, where does a person go for affordable training in the medical field?
I don't know.
Yeah.
maybe to the mission field. We're running surgery residencies in Africa, and they're very affordable. We're
teaching,
but you have to be a national surgeon or national doctor to get that kind of training. Healthcare has gotten extremely expensive to get an education in, and that's true not only for physicians but nurses and others as well. I think the principles we teach our students is to keep your cost as low as possible, live cheaply, and because, you know, once you, especially for medical students, once you get into medical school, people loan you any kind of money you want. And, you know, and all of a sudden I got to have a new car and a nicer apartment and all the rest of it. So that's part of it. Secondly, if you're interested in missions, there's organizations like a group we help start called MedSend, which helps pay off loans for those going overseas as missionaries, or there's programs to help those that are helping the poor. So if you go work in the inner city in a Christian ministry, my children did that, and, you know, their loans were paid off $25,000 a year by the government because they were getting a lot less income helping the poor in the inner city. So there's ways to deal with it, you know, preventively and then after the fact. But the bottom line is, if God has called you into healthcare, you should follow that call. And do it with wisdom, do it with good advice, but realize that that's his plan for your life, and he can help you handle the cost and pay off the loans or whatever's necessary to follow his will.
Say a word about you were just on a trip to the Philippines doing relief work there. It's one of the things that CMDA does with sending medical teams. The Philippines, of course, been devastated by that typhoon. Tell us what you saw.
We were in a place in the center of that in Tacloban in the island of Leyte in the Philippines. This typhoon was one of the largest ever recorded in history, over 200 mile an hour winds and a 17 foot tidal surge. Now you can imagine what that does to a city. I mean, it literally looked like somebody had just mowed the buildings down and broken up even concrete block buildings and severely damaged poured concrete buildings. Over 5,000 people were killed. They were pulling bodies out when we arrived. They were still pulling bodies out a month after the effect from the debris. And you can imagine what that was like in the heat and humidity that we worked in. We saw patients out in the community. We went into the rural areas where everybody had lost something, most of them their homes, many of them their rice fields, their coconut groves that will take 20 years to grow back. Very resilient people as you talk to them, and you would express sympathy. And they say, oh, we're just so thankful no one in our family died. But just seeing tragedy, I remember a grandmother that was running screaming through the airport. She lost all six children and 22 grandchildren in the typhoon, and her whole family was gone. We worked with the Salvation Army, great opportunity for ministry, working along their pastors, who they call officers, and doing spiritual ministry and praying with patients and meeting their physical needs. We had staff there about 6 to 8 weeks through the worst of it. Very difficult living conditions, sleeping on the floor, high humidity, mosquitoes and hordes and roaches as big as your thumb, and rats in our house biting people's feet while they slept. And, yeah, it wasn't for the weak of heart, but we were where Christ would have been, and were able to touch a lot of lives. And people came to Christ, and others had their faith strengthened, and we praise the Lord for that.
I got just a final note here. We got a couple of minutes left, but the National Center for Health Statistics coming out with a new report talking about the increased number of cohabitations. I'm just thinking, you know, just in terms of healthy choices and lifestyles in America, we're not always being very wise, are we?
We're not. And unfortunately, the abnormal is becoming the normal, you know, with people waiting much longer to get married, not getting married at all, having children out of wedlock, acceptance. And no one would believe 5 or 10 years ago how fast we've gone from where we were then now to same-sex marriage. And now, you know, you're watching on TV shows glorifying polygamy and transgenderism, and it just goes on and on. And we're seeing the breakdown of our whole societal framework, and we're becoming very libertarian where anything goes. And the more outrageous it is, the more entertaining it is for people to watch and observe or to participate in. And we need revival, Neil, more than we've ever needed before. We need people who love the Lord living out their faith in the marketplace and speaking with love and compassion into our culture. The future looks bleak until you realize who we're facing the future with. And that's where we give hope, and this gives us great opportunity to touch lives because people are more hunger for spirituality than they've ever been at the same time that they're more accepting of things that contradict God's word. And we need to bring that hunger together with the needs that they have in their life.
A reminder, those in the medical profession and certainly churches to come alongside, there's a real ministry opportunities there, aren't there?
There are, absolutely. And the key is to meet people at their point of need, whatever that is, socially, psychologically, spiritually, physically, and get to know them as individuals and then touch their lives through our example and through our words. That's what Christ did. And we can do the same no matter what you do, whether you're a plumber or an electrician or a housewife, whatever you do, God gives you opportunities to relate with people and kind words and an interest in them and looking beyond your own needs to their needs opens the door to share the gospel as you build a relationship. And if you don't know how to do it, you need to learn how to do it. It's the most important thing you can do.
Dr. David Stevens is the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. They're the largest faith-based organization in the nation, over 16,500 doctor members. And Dr. Stevens has given us some great insight and encouragement and challenge again today. And we appreciate the opportunity to connect with him. You can find out more about their work and resources and ways that you can advocate for faith understanding in the healthcare. CMDA.org is the website, CMDA.org. Dr. Stevens, great to visit with you again. Thanks so much for taking some time today.
God bless you, Neil.
Dr. David Stevens joined us here on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the program or want to pass it on to a friend, you can always do that to post the podcast after the show. You can go to our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And join us tomorrow as we talk a little bit about affirmation. We're going to practice affirmation on tomorrow's show. Hope to see you then. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.